It's live expert money and real estate advice every Sunday. Elise Glink is on 95.5 FM and AM 750. News Talk WSB.
Hey, welcome back, everybody. It's Elise Glink. Thanks for joining me again at our regularly scheduled time, can you believe it, on the Elise Glink Show, live on Sundays here, 11 to 1, News Talk WSB. We are clearing out the phone lines and opening it up, getting rid of Wes Moss as his calls, and we're going to start taking ours, 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. Okay, Twitter, already going strong, at Glink, at G-L-I-N-K. If you're not following along, tweeting during the show, you're missing some of the conversation, sometimes as much as half the conversation. So I encourage you to follow me on Twitter if you're not already doing so. We have a Facebook page. Lots of people follow me there. You can join on, Elise Glink. And then there's the website, thinkglink.com, T-H-I-N-K-G-L-I-N-K.com. That's the real place to go. You want to sign up for the free weekly newsletter. There's all kinds of special stuff that gets pushed out in the newsletter each week. That is only going to increase as we go into the new year. All kinds of new stuff being planned for thinklink.com. New look, new capabilities, lots of new video. Have you looked at our very new Real Estate Minute videos and the Real Estate News Brief? And now we've got a new one called Ask Elise. That should be familiar to you because you're calling in every week asking questions. So lots of really cool stuff planned for the new year on thinklink.com, all of which can be yours if you sign up for the free weekly newsletter. So go there, do that on every single page. We'll make it easy for you. We will push out like 20, 30 pieces of content for you each week. And that way, when you want to see all the cool stuff we're doing on Yahoo, you can just start at the ThinkLink newsletter. If you want to see all the cool stuff we're doing on CBS News and Money Watch, just go there. Or the Equifax Finance blog. Also, big, huge, interesting changes planned for that blog this year. The new year, 2013. And that's really where we start today, with the idea that we are almost at the end of this year. I can hardly believe it's December. It is really warm out today, so it doesn't really feel like December, and yet it is. So we are in the last couple of weeks of this year, and we've got some good stuff planned for the month. We've got another tax show coming up so that you can figure out every single thing you need to do before the end of the year to minimize next April 15th. You know we do that every year. Some good information on just getting yourself ready for the start of the year. I know you probably remember that I do this kind of personal finance resolutions, real estate resolutions. All of those are going to be coming forward, and you're going to hear some of those next week, and then, of course, right after we dump into the new year. So lots of good stuff coming down the line. And we're open for business today, 404-872-0750 if you've got questions, or if you'd like me to pick up the cost of the call, you know I will, 1-800-WSB-TALK. So, interesting story on the homepage of the AJC this morning, right? Bank backtracks after improper foreclosure. These kinds of stories make me want to cry. The New York Times on the page one of the business section today also had a long story about how widows are being foreclosed upon six times the rate they were in 2007, I think it is. And that's because of paperwork. It's just a paperwork error, and it looks like that's what happened here. You know, another little paperwork error, and a woman got foreclosed on, even though she was going through the HomeSafe program, which is part of the U.S. Treasury's hardest hit fund, and that provides assistance for up to 18 months of payments. It's really great what Georgia's doing. It's just a long, sad story. And if you think about what's going on, what's interesting about the New York Times version of this, which is focusing specifically on widows, what happens with widows who are over the age of 50, and this is something I've spent my whole career fighting against, whole career. Women over the age of 50 are so much less likely to understand where the money is in their house than women who are younger or who are married, and married women, this is the problem, right? Because you're married and your husband does everything for you. And you don't know where the money is. Your name isn't on the mortgage. How many times have we had calls on this show where somebody says, well, I think my husband's name is on the mortgage. Well, why isn't your name on the mortgage? You guys live there together. You've been married 40 years. Why aren't you owning property jointly? And only rarely is it, well, he owned it before we got married and blah, blah, blah. We just never did the paperwork. It's more of this, I'm the man, I control the money. Well, that's great. Until you die, and women, married women typically outlive their husbands by like 7 years, and you haven't done the job you need to do to tell your wife where the money is, make sure the documents are in order. She doesn't know how to manage the checkbook or how to pay the bills or where are the bills or anything else. This kind of separation of financial duties doesn't work when something goes wrong. It might work fine for 20 years where in a traditional family, the husband went out, made the money and came home and paid the bills and did all that, and the wife raised the kids and cooked and cleaned and did the grocery shopping and whatever, right? That's, was how it was, like back in the 50s. We've all watched Mad Men, right? The problem is today it doesn't work so well because those families who are now in their 50s and 60s and 70s who still live that traditional division of labor wind up in a place where the husband dies, maybe suddenly, maybe not, and the wife ends up not knowing where anything is and not having her name on the mortgage, and they're behind or upside down and she's trying to get a loan modification and she can't because her name isn't in the mortgage. And so only one lender right now, Chase, is allowing widows who are in this situation, and they think there's 1.5 million of them. It's not even like some small, well, we're talking 20,000, 30,000 people. It's 1.5 million with more to come. So these women are losing their husbands, losing their income. Their name isn't on the mortgage. Paperwork, they won't allow for the assumption of the mortgage, which you're supposed to do, right? All lenders allow that. But you can't do the assumption of the mortgage while you're also doing a loan modification because that sends you back to square one. And then out of the blue, your home might get foreclosed on. Folks, it just can't go on this way. We have to figure out how to close the loops. If you could see my inbox after last week, I must have had 50 emails. If you emailed me and I didn't get back to you, I am really sorry. I must have had 50 emails since last week. Half of them were, I know you talked about FHA Streamline refinances and how easy it is and that you shouldn't have to pull credit history and you shouldn't have to do an appraisal, but my lender says no. What do I do? Half of those were that question. And then the other half was all the stuff that we've been talking about foreclosures and the future and where we're going in 2013. And I just have to say, when I read these stories, like in the New York Times or the homepage of the AJC today, I realize how far we have yet to go. And my fervent hope for 2013 is that the lenders are finally going to close the loops on these things. Because we can't have 1.5 million women over 50 going into foreclosure, being financially devastated, when the people who are acquiring debt the fastest are in their 60s and 70s. It's true. The baby boomers, the older part of the baby boomers, but all the baby boomers, have never met a debt they didn't like. And this is going to cause profound problems for us as we move into the latter part of this decade. And beyond. I don't even think anybody even realizes it. We're also focused on the fiscal cliff, which, by the way, looked better for a little bit. So the stock market went up, looked a lot worse. John Boehner, no, we're not doing a deal. Obama, we are doing a deal. Inching closer and closer. I encourage you to read both of these stories. The New York Times story is online. It's the homepage of the business section. I'll try and tweet out the link. And then, of course, the AJC this morning. Good stories about big problems, and it's not just about these women's lives, the 3 or 4 or 5 who are featured in it. They're emblematic of a huge problem that lurks below the surface. And when somebody says to me, hey, Elise, what is it again you mean by shadow inventory? I think there are all kinds of shadow inventories out there. They're the people who are lurking around the whole foreclosure thing where the banks haven't foreclosed on yet. They're people like this group of widows who are, this year, another who knows how many hundreds of thousands will become widows and their names aren't on the paperwork and they're going to fall into foreclosure It's all the things that we can't even keep our eye on because we don't remember that this is yet another subset of this huge problem called the housing crisis. And I'll let you, we'll go to the phones, 404-872-0750. In just a moment, I'm going to give you this one statistic. When people tell me how much better things are going and how much better they're doing in the real estate business, 2008, real estate transactions in the city of Chicago. City of Chicago, $28 billion. Guess where they were last year? $5 billion. We didn't bump up to another $28 billion this year. $28 billion to $5 billion. That's more than 80%. That is a depression by any stretch of the imagination, and that is playing out in most of the big foreclosure markets, including Georgia. I didn't look up the numbers yet for Atlanta, but I will, and I will tweet those out as well. But those numbers indicate we are still in a housing crisis. We are making some progress, but not a lot. There is so much more to go. And that is emblematic of what is going on with the widows, just at this one little subset. One little subset. All right, 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. You're going to have to join me on Twitter to hear that, at Glink, at G-L-I-N-K. Robin joins us on the line from Dunwoody. Hi, Robin.
Hi, how are you this morning?
You know, I'm good. A little irritated about the whole foreclosure thing. What about you?
I am too. I agree.
What can I do to help you today?
Well, I luckily found someone to purchase my home, some friends of mine that came and visited and fell in love with
Great.
The house and the area. So I'm trying to get a method and a process on how we can close. They're pre-qualified for their mortgage.
Mm-hmm.
So I assume, I just need you to kind of hear me out here, I assume I need to get an appraisal and a closing attorney, and they'll get their own. Is that correct?
No. So if they're so here's what you do need to do. You need an attorney. They need an attorney. You need a closing, a title company or an escrow company like Chicago Title or, you know, one of the big ones to be the place where you both kind of submit your instructions and then they actually get the mechanics of the closing done. The real estate attorneys can do that for you as well. Now, their lender, they're pre-qualified, but are they pre-approved for the loan?
Yes.
So they're pre-approved. That means their lender will send out an appraiser to make sure the property appraises out in value. You don't have to do that. You don't have to pay for it. They may want to have a professional home inspector come through. You should be fine. You need to hire a real estate attorney because there are certain disclosures you have to make as an owner. And it's unlikely you're going to know how to do that and get the process going. So you need to call... you need a residential real estate attorney to help you with this, or you could try just going straight to the escrow company, but then you won't have anybody representing your interests, and I'd really like you to have somebody representing your interests.
Okay. So I need the residential closing attorney and the escrow company.
Correct. And you guys can share the cost of the escrow company. You may need to provide title insurance, and the attorney and the escrow company can help you with that. In different pockets of Georgia, sometimes the seller pays for some of it, sometimes the buyer pays for some of it, sometimes the seller pays for all of it. They're your friends. You want this to go well. So having an attorney involved will allow you guys to preserve your friendship and just get the deal done.
Okay, great.
So here's where I want you to go to find an attorney. I want you to go to the Atlanta Bar Association. And I want you to go ask for the head of the real estate committee. I don't know who it is this year. You know, it used to be that I've known them in the past. Don't know who it is now. But the head of the real estate committee, tell that person what you're trying to do. Ask for a couple of recommendations and referrals and go call those attorneys. You should be able to get that whole thing done by tomorrow. Get it moving. Even if they're your friends and they love your house, things happen when deals stretch on too long. So get the attorney. The attorney will help you find the escrow company, get it going, and try and get the deal closed as quickly as possible. 20 minutes past the hour, we got a full slate of calls, which means we're going to be answering questions. 404-872-0750. Stay tuned. Be back in a moment with more on News Talk WSB.
Find her expert advice anytime at thinkglink.com and find her live midday every Sunday on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM News Talk WSB.
Hey, welcome. Welcome back, everybody, to the Elise Glink Show, live on Sundays. Don't forget to follow me on Twitter, at Glink, at G-L-I-N-K. It's time for Real Estate Insight with Rhonda Duffy of Duffy Real Estate of Atlanta. Rhonda, welcome back to the show.
Thank you, and thanks for having me.
Sure. So what are some of the things that buyers should do before they even look at houses, even online? What do you recommend?
Well, we have something that I created called a 101 house hunting worksheet. This puts people individually and together with the ideas that they have about what they're looking for. So they're able to look online. It's kind of a worksheet here that they use independently. They look online, they find examples, maybe not the whole house, but if I said to somebody, well, you know, I've always wanted a house with a front porch, other people will be thinking to themselves that I mean a wraparound porch, but I might just mean a portico that somebody doesn't get rained on when they're waiting for me if it's raining, right?
I got to tell you something. What I love about this is that you're really evoking more and detailed information from buyers. And as all the agents always say, you know, behind their backs, of course, buyers are liars. And they don't really mean that. What they mean is, of course, buyers are not adept at explaining what it is they're truly looking for. And this worksheet sounds like a smart way to do that.
Well, they've never compared their idea with their partner, right? So then they're having arguments inside the house because one partner is not cooperating, you know, and this can all be avoided if somebody identifies what they're looking for before they get started.
Go ahead.
So the partners get to meet up together, compare their worksheets, show examples, you know, kind of have a better idea and have that conversation before they get into the emotional house hunt. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I mean, once you're in, boy, everything just kind of swirls around you. It's like being in love and you're not thinking clearly.
Well, that's why they say real estate agents sometimes have to be marriage counselors. And it's not necessary because we're not equipped to be marriage counselors, right?
Right. I always think about your relationship with an agent as a short-term marriage in itself, which is starting to sound like something we shouldn't be talking about in a Sunday morning.
Right, exactly.
So I assume you've got this all up on your blog today?
Yes, I do, RhondaDuffy.com. And you can find lots of information, too, at DuffyRealtyOfAtlanta.com.
It's a great blog. Rhonda, thanks so much for being with us today.
You're welcome. See you next week.
See you next week. I'm Elise Glink. Stay tuned. We'll be back in a flash with more of the Elise Glink Show on News Talk WSB.
Find her expert advice anytime at thinkglink.com and find her live midday every Sunday on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM News Talk WSB.
35 minutes past the hour, News Talk WSB. I'm Elise Glink. Thanks for joining me today, December 2013, right around the corner. So I've already had a tweet from David saying that we were talking at the top of the show about how appalling it is that women over the age of 50 who become widowed, you know, are much more likely to lose their home because it's all in the husband's name. And so this guy named David tweeted and said, "Everything is my name. She doesn't want me to change that." Women, I'm talking to the large group of you who are listening to me who are over the age of 50, if that describes you and you just don't want to deal with it, I have to tell you that this is going to be a game changer in your life. You will have to deal with this at some point in time in your life. And if you don't take charge of the money and if you don't understand it now, you're never going to do it. And when the inevitable happens and it all falls on your shoulders, you will be much older, much less inclined to deal with it, much more confused, and much more grave danger that you will not be able to manage your financial life. So if your husband has everything in his name that you have built together all these decades, you have to change it, and you have to change it this week. That should be your 2013 New Year's resolution. Say this: I want to own equally everything we've built. I want to understand where it is. I want to know where the documents are. I want to create an estate planning book. I want to be able to have the pieces organized in a way so that I can just pick them up if I have to at a moment's notice and I can carry on the legacy of this family. That's what I need you to do. And for the husbands out there who say they don't want it, you should insist. You should want them to understand and have this knowledge. You should want them to know where everything is and be engaged on a financial level of near life. How are they going to manage without you? Incredible. 404-872-0750. Let's go back to the phones. John joins us on the line from Ackworth. Hi, John.
Hi, Elise. Thanks for taking my call.
Sounds good. What's going on?
So I had a question about potentially refinancing my house. My wife and I, we bought it in 2010. Have a 30-year mortgage at 5.25%.
Mm-hmm.
It's an FHA loan. We're interested in refinancing, you know, obviously to a lower rate. Would really like to do a 15-year loan. But I'm hearing from my mortgage broker that I guess we need to be concerned about what the house is going to appraise at in order to do that.
Well, that's if you trade in and go to a different loan type. You're at a 30-year and you want to go to a 15-year, then you're going to have to go through the whole appraisal process.
Right.
If you have an FHA loan and you do a streamline refinance, mm-hmm. they're not supposed to be pulling appraisals, and they're not supposed to be pulling credit checks.
Right.
So you can make a 30-year loan act like a 15-year loan, though.
Well, let me, and I agree with you. The thing she's telling us on the FHA streamline refinance
mm-hmm.
is that because of the increase in the MIP.
In the mortgage insurance, yeah.
Yeah. There's not enough benefit.
Mm-hmm.
Even though the rate is being lowered, the payment's not going to go down enough.
To qualify.
To make it, yeah, to make it worthwhile.
So what most people don't understand is that FHA, because it's broke, I mean, it is seriously underwater.
Yeah.
FHA has had to increase dramatically the fees that it charges for mortgage insurance. We have private mortgage insurance, PMI, but in the FHA world, it's MIP, Mortgage Insurance Program.
Mm-hmm.
And there are government regulations so that you stop the kind of continual refining for no end other than to benefit the bank's balance in their pocketbooks, right? They've stepped in and said, well, you can refinance, but you have to get X amount of benefit out of it. And you've probably heard me, Herb, talk about home run refinances, where it's not just about lowering the interest rate, it's about lowering the payment and shortening the loan term and all the rest. Now, you can go outside the FHA world if you actually have equity in the property. Do you have equity?
Well, that's the thing. We bought it 2 years ago. It was a foreclosure. I think we paid $103,000. I don't know what it would appraise at. That's, I guess, kind of what it comes down to then.
Okay.
It would need to appraise higher.
Or you would need to, yes, it would need to appraise higher, and you would need to bring some cash to the closing maybe.
Yeah. Okay.
But I think you should do a little more investigating. So you know what it looks like to do a streamlined refinance with your own lender.
Mm-hmm.
Now you need to go outside and you need to talk to everybody about what it would look like if you just did a 15-year loan or a 10-year loan at 3%. I'm assuming you have great credit.
Yeah.
No, now, you won't get the very lowest interest rate because you don't have 20% equity in the house. That
right.
matters. So if you have 20 grand to bring with you, or maybe prices have gone up a little bit and now the house is worth 110, you have 10,000 to bring in, that would maybe be a different story. But even so, you might be able to get a 15-year at 3.5%.
Without it appraising?
No, you have to have at least 5 or 7% in equity.
Okay.
So the first thing you need to do is go talk to a local real estate agent and start searching online for what homes in your neighborhood are actually selling for. And you can call the agent who sold you the house and talk to her or him about what's going on in the neighborhood with home prices and start taking a look around and educate yourself. That's like
yeah.
the first thing.
Yeah, okay.
And then once you educate yourself and you figure out what things are going for, you can make a move that's smart. But it will definitely involve calling 4 or 5 different kinds of lenders. I want you to talk to a big bank, a regional bank, a local credit union. If you belong to one or you can join one, you can look online. Like, you need to go out and do some canvassing, and it's going to give you great information that you can then go back to the bank and say, this is the deal I want, and if you don't give it to me, this lender over here is happy to do it.
Okay.
All right?
Very good advice. Thank you.
Let me know how it goes, Herb. 42 minutes past the hour, 404-872-0750. Ron joins us on the line. Hey, Ron.
Hey, how are you?
I'm good, thanks. What's going on?
Not much. I just wanted to talk to you a little bit about the shadow inventory, the
mm-hmm.
widows. Well, I think it's more like the banking industry that has foreclosed on these people's homes on you know, 62 million mortgages are held by MERS, and they're transferring these people's mortgages to, you know, from the different banks and whatnot. And then when you're late on your payment, They're forcing people into foreclosure. Then they're holding this inventory. They're not selling it. There's several million homes on the market that are not on the market right now, that are not even being listed in the MSL, that MLS, that should be available, or rather shouldn't. You know, these are homes that the banks are having in their inventory. That's the real shadow inventory.
Well, that but, is, you know, hold on. That is one, yes, acknowledged. That is one huge chunk of shadow inventory. What I'm suggesting is there are other areas of shadow inventory that are getting lost in the shuffle.
Oh, of course. I mean, there's all kinds of inventory out there that's, you know, one way or the other being lost. But what's happened, the people you say educate, if people were to educate themselves and really get what's going on out there, they would be shocked. The reason why there's widows out there is because these poor guys that are 50, 55 years old are dropping dead because they're wondering how they're going to pay the mortgage. they can't.
You're seeing a direct correlation there.
Well, I mean, think about it. It really happens. I've got a lot of insight about what's going on this, and I'm telling you, it's not what people think. The industry is it's not the left-right paradigm. It's not Obama. It's not, you know, George Bush or Romney. This is something that's happening. It's been happening for a very, very long time, for about 15 years now. There's a guy that, his name is Richard Black, and he wrote a book called How to Rob a Bank. The Best Way to Rob a Bank is to Own One. You may want to look that up or tell your listeners to go look that up. He is he's a top investigator with the Savings and Loan, he's a top investigator with the Savings and Loan that investigated the Savings and Loan crisis back a couple decades ago. He brought all that to a head, and now he's a professor at,
He's a professor somewhere.
At a prominent university.
But the his point is?
Well, his point is, these guys, these banks, Goldman Sachs, Lehman Brothers, you know, of course they're gone, but all these banks have securitized all of these loans, all your mortgage, your car loan, credit cards, all that money is being traded on the bond market. This is way above most people. But what's happening is they're shifting this money around and playing Monopoly with it. And in the process, they're taking people's homes. They don't have a right to take people's homes.
I think they do have a right to take people's homes. And, in fact, MERS has been challenged in every single state in this country. And MERS keeps winning. MERS has won. MERS, for everybody else listening, is got some. It's an acronym for an electronic mortgage registration system that's actually owned by, I believe, the Mortgage Bankers Association of America, or at least those member banks. And so your mortgage gets kind of registered there, and there's the accusation that banks have gone outside legal channels to register there, and then they were foreclosing through there, and it was illegal. But it has been challenged and rejected in every single state that I can find. There's not a single case where MERS has lost.
Well, there's plenty of cases, and we can talk about it.
No, there are plenty. There may be plenty of cases, but when you look at the challenge, when you look at the actual legal challenges, I have yet to see one where it has people win at the first level, maybe, most times they don't, and then it gets challenged at a higher appellate level, and they lose, and it goes back to MERS.
The idea of them not being or should not be able to come in and take someone's home is based on the predication that the mortgages have been paid for. How have they been paid for? The other guy, your company, your corporate, your AT&T 401k portfolio investors, these companies, these municipal bonds, all these big corporations or countries that have bought into the American bond market that have therefore lost that investment is how these mortgages have been paid for. It's a big shifting of the wealth, you know, worldwide. And again, your mortgage, whether you acknowledge it or not, your mortgage has been paid for. People don't understand what I mean when I say that. These people that have invested all your, the reason why the 401k and the bond market, the stock market went down, or rather the 401k, a lot of people's savings have just vanished, is because those funds were invested in bonds.
All right, so let's back up a second, Ron. Talk about your own you do have a substantial body of knowledge inside your head, I can tell. So where did that come from? What did you do in the mortgage industry, or what do you do?
What do I do?
Or what did you do that brought on this knowledge?
Invest. I have a substantial amount of property that if I lost, and see, this is what happens. I had to think about what would happen if I lose my property. Well, they're going to take my property, and then they're going to come after me through the IRS. They're going to send me a write-off, which is a gift, you know, a tax. They're going to write off the loss, and then they're going to come to me through the IRS. I'm going to have to pay the IRS the money.
Well,
and I thought, this is not right. I got to fight that. I got to figure out what's going on. I figured it out.
Okay.
And quite frankly, I own every one of my properties.
Well, so you own it, so that means that nobody's going to be able to take it. But I appreciate your thoughts about it. I'm not sure I completely understand what information and message you're trying to impart to our listeners today, but it's certainly clear that you've got a lot of passion for the subject. I just have to finish and say that I don't believe that it's a Ponzi scheme. I do believe that banks have completely mismanaged the housing crisis and to the detriment of the housing crisis. And when I say that we're still in a housing depression, I mean that we're in a housing depression. And you're right that there are millions of homes that should be listed on the MLS, but the law gives banks 5 years to sell that inventory. There is no requirement for them to list it immediately. And if they did, everybody else who lives in those neighborhoods would be hurting even worse than they already are. And so by slowly putting those properties back on the market, once demand is slightly more established, which it is right now, instead of plunging prices, hopefully we're going to see prices at least hold steady and start to move in the right direction. But I thank you so much for your call today. 404-872-0750. You can comment on Twitter. A whole bunch of people have. At Glink, at GLINK. 50 minutes past the hour. I'm Elise Glink. I'll be back in a moment with more on News Talk WSB.
Find her expert advice anytime at thinkglink.com and find her live midday every Sunday on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM News Talk WSB.
Hey, 56 minutes past the hour. Thanks for stopping by with me today. We're back to our regularly scheduled time. So glad about that, 11 to 1. 404-872-0750. Having an interesting conversation on Twitter with Elisa, who said, my lawyer told me that because of rights of survivorship, that both names on the title aren't necessary. Also, it allows one to leave debt. If you are talking about rights of survivorship, that's usually joint tenancy with rights of survivorship. That means that you are a co-owner, right? You just get the rest of the property when somebody dies. What we're talking about is something that's only in the husband's name, and then you inherit it, but you have to have an assumption, right? You're going to be put onto the mortgage. That's where the problem is. If you're behind in the loan, you have to assume the loan. You're trying to get a loan modification at the same time. It doesn't work. That's the problem right there. And I seriously want every woman listening to this show to make sure you are an equal partner in the financial knowledge of your family. You deserve that. You should own that. And you should want it. And your husband should want it as well. 2013. Big financial resolution, I think. 404-872-0750. Let's see if we can get another quick call before we go. Roger joins us on the line from Marietta. Hey, Roger, what's going on?
Elise, I have a question about investment property. Me and my friend, we would like to invest into the rental to buy properties for renting it out.
Mm-hmm.
And my question is that whether we should just go ahead with the private mortgage rate type of deal, or should we form an LLC, and how different they are, and what are the really pluses and minuses kind of?
So, Roger, I mean, it's too complicated a question to actually answer in the 2 minutes that I have, because it's not just you. It's you and somebody else that you're not directly related to.
That's correct.
So I'm going to give you a place to go to start learning more about this. I wrote an ebook, five-part ebook series that we have available on Amazon for $2.99. There's a whole section on how should I hold title to my property. You in with somebody else, you're going to want to hold it, I think, in some sort of LLC, but there are going to be problems associated with that and costs that you aren't even imagining. So you're going to have to weigh the balance of both of those things. And you guys are going to have a real serious conversation about it. So go to Amazon.com, look up Elise Glenk eBooks, and this one will pop up. I'll tweet out the link as well. It's over 130 pages on investing in real estate. And you're going to want to tune in because we're going to do an investing in real estate seminar sometime in April. And I'll let you know about that as well. 58 minutes past the hour, 404-872-0750. Stay tuned. I'll be back with a whole other hour on News Talk WSB.
Find her expert advice anytime at thinklink.com and find her live midday every Sunday on 95.5 FM and AM 750 News Talk WSB.
It's 12:06 and 12:07. Thanks so much for joining me today on News Talk WSB. This is Elise Glenk. This is the Elise Glenk Show. We're live every Sunday, 11 to 1. Because football is officially over. At least, I think it's over. 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. I'll pick up the cost of that call if you like. Online, thinkglink.com, thinkglink.com. At Glink is the Twitter handle. You should follow me there. Tweeting up a storm, having conversations about what it actually means to be on title to something. It's fascinating to me that women just think it doesn't matter. I'm telling you, folks, it so matters. It's been a theme of the show today that the New Year's resolution I want for everyone is for equal ownership, equal understanding of what you own and where you own it. 7 minutes past the hour, Herb joins us on the air right now. So, Herb, you're trying to sell a car?
Yeah, Elise, let me tell you, your show is the highlight of Weekend Talk Radio.
Oh, Herb, you're warming my heart.
Oh,
thank you.
Well, give me some good advice. I'm trying to sell a car online, and I have been contacted by a purchaser who wants to handle the transaction through PayPal. My wife is convinced this prospective buyer is a scamster and is up to no good. I have never used PayPal before. Do I expose myself to fraud if I open an account?
PayPal is really interesting.
Yeah.
So let me back up a little bit and say that what they have done and what they have tried to do, and I think have done it effectively, is to become what's known as the fifth wallet. So when you think about money, you've got your credit cards, you've got cash, you've got a checkbook, and now you have PayPal. And PayPal is used by people all over the world to transfer money. It is one of the great ideas of this century, I have to say. I think you're perfectly safe. PayPal is like a bank now. They spend millions and millions and millions of dollars to make sure their systems are safe. In fact, I have a very good friend who just sold a microscope online. Don't even ask. Just don't ask. Anyway, it's a microscope, an old microscope. And he sold it online, and he's being paid through PayPal for a guy he's never met. And he does it all the time. So he pays his son through PayPal.
Okay.
So I think you're perfectly safe. You just want to set up and make sure, because before you ship the car, before they pick, right, the money's going to be in your account.
Yes.
And you'll be able to verify it's in your account, and you can move it from that PayPal account into your regular account if you want, so that you know you have your cash.
Excellent.
It's so much better than somebody handing you a cashier's check. And this is why the banks go crazy, right?
Sure.
Because why pay the bank $25 for a cashier's check that could be fraud, right? If you get one, it's like that old scam where they give you it, and it's like, oh, it's here's your check for the car, and then by the time you go and cash it and you think it's legitimate, it's not, and they've absconded with your cash and your car. PayPal is different. It instantly transfers, so you know that the money is verified.
Okay, good.
So I think you should feel okay about it.
Thanks for your advice, Elise.
You're welcome. Thanks for listening. I appreciate it. 1210 on News Talk WSB, December 2nd, 404-872-0750. Scott joins us on the line. You've just been through a bankruptcy, it seems like.
Well, it was a few years ago, and it was mainly due to taxes owed to the state of Georgia, who would not settle with us. My question is, now that we've reestablished credit, we're in the process of financing a home. We'll find out on the credit report that the state of Georgia is still showing the lien open. We've contacted the department down there to get it corrected or filed correctly, as everybody else did after the discharge, but they refuse to and say they do not have to correct the filing of the lien that was filed prior to the bankruptcy and will not give us any kind of justification. My question is there any recourse or anything we can do to the state of Georgia to get that corrected? And two, will a lender allow us, will proof of the discharge of the taxes showing that we don't owe that they are uncollectible, will they allow us to finance a home?
Yes.
A showing at the courthouse.
Right. So, yes, they will. They'll do an endorsement on the title over it. You'll have to pay a little bit for that. But it troubles me that Georgia won't correct this. Right?
Yes.
It really troubles me, especially when you've got proof that you paid it. So,
I thought the federal, overrode the state and the state of Georgia on most situations like that. I mean, and I thought when you have a federal...
It's a federal bankruptcy. It is.
Right.
So what are you getting? You're getting an employee who's had a really bad day who doesn't feel like doing it. Right?
I went above the representative's head that we spoke to and went to the supervisor, who gave me the same runaround and would not do anything either. So is there any recourse to that?
Well, let me give you some insight.
Right.
You might want to try the Governor's Office of Consumer Affairs.
Okay.
Which has an ombudsman.
Okay.
When you call that person, I would ask that question.
All right.
So that is one thing that you can do. You could file suit just to annoy them.
would be worth it, to be honest with you.
To make them pay attention. Which department are you trying to have this? Is it the Department of Banking and Finance?
No. It's the state of Georgia.
Right. The Georgia Department of Banking
Department
and Finance. Or it's Department of Revenue?
Georgia Department of Revenue, yes.
So you could call and see if there's an ombudsman at the Georgia Department of Revenue. And
they have a taxpayer advocacy.
Is that the person who told you we're not helping?
No, I could never get through to those people, and they didn't return the phone call. So I think
you want to follow up there. The reason they don't return phone calls is that they, like me, are bombarded. Right?
Okay.
They probably need some more hands on deck. But right. You can certainly do that. You just want to get this corrected. You could go to an enrolled agent licensed to represent taxpayers before the IRS, but they also have, in Georgia, contacts with the state Department of Revenue. They may be able to grease the wheel a little bit. So you pay a little money to them, but they may be able to get it done. So I'm giving you some options of things that you can do. The enrolled agents are at number www.4GAEA, Georgia Association of Enrolled Agents, .org, and it's the guys that we have on our tax, when we do our tax shows.
Okay.
It's those guys. Like, they run it, and you could, online, you could find an EA near you, and they may have those contacts. And they may have some other ideas for this. So those are some ways for you to do it. But really what you want to do is buy a house. And so usually what happens here is you bring your proof. Oh, I have another idea for you as well.
Okay.
You can go to the three credit reporting bureaus. And you can file an affidavit with the proof you have, and they should discharge it from your credit.
Okay.
Because you are proving that it's incorrect. You have the proof. Now, that may take more than you can imagine, because then they're going to keep getting the information from the state's database that the lien is still valid, but it isn't.
Fantastic.
So I would try all of those things, and I just feel in my gut that something's going to happen for you.
Fantastic. Lee, thank you so much for taking my call.
You're very welcome. Have a great new year. 15 minutes past the hour, 404-872-0750. We're moving through our calls. It's very exciting for me. Brandy joins us on the line from Alabama. Hey, Brandy.
Hi, Elise. I have a question. Before Katrina hit, I purchased my house for $67,000. It was well below equity at the time, and they used it as a home equity loan versus a mortgage. Is it still possible to streamline that?
Before Katrina, did you have a 30-year payout on it, or a 20-year or 15-year?
30.
How much do you have left?
About 65. It was actually 57. I had to refinance up to 67 because I got divorced. And
okay. But okay, so when did you get this latest loan?
4 years ago, 5 years ago.
4 or 5 years ago? Mm-hmm. And what's your house worth?
Last time it was appraised, it was $90,000.
Okay. So you've got plenty of equity.
Yeah. The problem with me is I work in the service industry.
Uh-huh.
So I can't prove the majority of my income. You get $213 an hour in a paycheck, yeah, but you can't prove that you make, you know, maybe $70 or $100 a night.
Okay.
Except for through taxes. And, you know, I do my taxes, but after all the joys and the marketing crash, they don't want to see. They want proof. They want documentation, and it's difficult for me to provide that for them.
Right. So you are in a really tough spot because the only way, I'm just stating the obvious. My husband, Sam, says I am great at overstating the obvious. Maybe you have this problem in your life as well.
I'm pretty blunt myself.
So here's the issue. For anybody who's in a cash business, like you are, proving what you own, you know, what you make, is hard because you don't want to maybe state it all, although I'm sure you do, because that would be illegal,
yes,
on your taxes. And yet, you know, there are other things that may come out of that. And so the net amount that you have may not be enough to prove that you can afford even a $67,000 loan. You'd probably have to show income of about $20,000 to $22,000 a year. Do you show that on your taxes?
Yeah.
So if you show that on your taxes, on your tax return, there should, and you have plenty of equity and hopefully you have great credit, there should be a lender out there that wants your business. So you just have to search for it. So you should call a whole bunch of different kinds of lenders and bring your tax return and, you know, go to annualcreditreport.com, pay the, you know, the $9 for an Equifax credit score, and bring that to some different types of lenders, a credit union, a big bank, a regional bank, a small bank, an SNL, whatever it is, five or six of them, a mortgage broker. Say, this is what I'm trying to do. I know it's not a lot of money that I need. I have equity in the property, but I'd really like to lower my interest rate. I don't think you'll be able to lower a home equity loan. And then I should ask you, what is the rate on your home equity loan?
It's 7.5%.
It's pretty high.
Oh, it wasn't high, you know.
Wasn't high 4 years ago, but it's high today.
Oh, boy, isn't it?
Yeah, but I don't think that you can just have a, you know, you can ask them if they will just lower the interest rate, but my guess is they're going to say no.
Yeah.
So what you want to do is you want to see if you could just get a new loan.
All right.
And I would try to get a 15-year loan, but if, you know, finances are a problem, then I would do another 30-year loan and just plan to pay it off in, say, 25 or 23 years.
Yeah.
Are you frustrated because you can't quite get people to listen?
It's not like my payments are horrible. They're less than $500 a month.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, it's one of those things where if I could lower it, it would be nice.
Right. Well, you have another issue.
Looking around and everybody's getting these great interest rates.
Okay, well, you can't.
This one.
Listen, you don't work in a place where you have a water cooler. You've got a drink machine, right?
I know, yeah.
So you have to, I encourage people to kind of step back away from that because there will be costs to refinancing.
Oh, yeah.
And you have to really think about whether it's worth it for the amount of loan that you have. I mean, if you're going to pay $3,000 or $4,000 to refinance a $67,000 loan, I got to tell you, you may just be better off taking the $3,000 or $4,000 and prepaying the loan.
Yeah.
And now you're only going to have $61,000. You may also be able to get a new home equity loan, not to refi it per se, but you just get a new one. And that may be a better way to go. So I want you to explore the options and don't feel frustrated just because a lot of people are going to say no to you. Just the amount that you're asking for, many lenders won't touch anything less than $75,000. So I know that sounds crazy, and some lenders will, but I promise you, some lenders do.
Yeah.
You just have to kind of say, get out of the whole, like, oh, my money isn't, my needs aren't good enough for them, and don't feel bad about it, right? Because I know, I can hear your voice. You're like, oh, my God, it's $67,000. It's such a huge amount of money. But lenders are a different breed. So you just have to get out of that mindset. It's not about you. If they say no to you, it's they just don't want your business. That's fine. That's what a free market's all about. And you're just going to go to the next one. And let me tell you, there are like, you know, 8,000 lenders in Georgia. You'll find one.
Yeah, but doesn't going lender to lender to lender and having them all check and pull my credit, won't that lower my credit score?
No, because you're not going to have them do it because you're going to go to them with your credit score in hand and say, assume this is my credit score and this is my credit history and this is what I'm asking for. I'm just going to put you on hold because I hear your child, I think it's your child crying in the background. You're just going to say, assume this, can you help me? And you're only going to apply with the lender who can actually help you. So no, it is not going to hurt you at all. You're going to be just fine. Let me know how it goes, Brandy. Thanks for your call. 404-872-0750. I think we have a prize pack we're giving away next. Stay tuned to News Talk WSB.
Find her expert advice anytime at thinkglink.com and find her live midday every Sunday on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM News Talk WSB.
Hey, it's 26 minutes past the hour. When we come back, there is a scam going on with cars and PayPal. So we had a call just a little while ago. We'll talk about that when we come back. But in the meantime, it's time for WSB McDonald's Weekend Prize Pack. Great prize value today, folks. $490. It includes a pair of tickets to Belk's presentation of the Atlanta Ballet's Nutcracker, December 7th, coming right up, through December 26th at the Fox Theater, a gift card for a Christmas decor kit courtesy of Pike Nurseries. Ooh, that sounds good. And a gift certificate for a full house plumbing inspection courtesy of Superior Plumbing. Wow. Awesome prize. $490. We're going to give it away to the fifth caller to the prize pack line, 404-741-0750. Be nice to Crystal. She's going to take your calls. Good luck. Remember, you can only win once every 30 days on News Talk WSB. But I hope you get this one. This sounds like a great way to spend some of your holiday. It's 27 minutes past the hour. When we come back, I will look up some more information about this car scam with PayPal so we know exactly what we're dealing with. But what I told you was true. My friend has actually sold a microscope and, you know, gotten all of his money through PayPal, and it's worked just fine. So let's parse that out a little bit. We've got a whole bunch of questions to get to. There's some Twitter comments going on. It's a free-for-all on the Elise Glink Show next on News Talk WSB.
Find her expert advice anytime at thinkglink.com and find her live midday every Sunday on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM News Talk WSB.
It's 36 minutes past the hour, 12:36 on the Elise Glink Show. Thanks so much for joining me today. 404-872-0750 or online if you can't get through on the phones. Twitter, at Glink, at G-L-I-N-K. Hey, don't forget to sign up for the free weekly newsletter at thinkglink.com. Big changes coming this year with the website. Want you to be a part of it. And I want you to have first dibs on our next event, which is going to take place in April. And we'll be releasing lots of information about it and all the cool stuff we're doing in the ThinkLink community just after the first of the year. So I want you to be a part of it. I want you to sign up for the newsletter. Join me on Twitter. Follow me on Facebook. Check out what we're doing in the ThinkLink community. Be a part of it, because the only way you're going to get ahead and beat the odds is to educate yourself. And that's what I'm here to do. Provide all that level of information so you can take it and run with it. So we had a call that there are all kinds of PayPal scams with buying a car. And so I looked online. Most of these date from 2010. There are a few from May, June of this year. Nothing that's absolutely late-breaking like December of 2012. But all of them have a very similar profile. And that is, it's really interesting. So there's one group that are all about, like, Marines. If they're not Marines, like our armed forces, but they work on, like, Marine rigs of some sort, and they're buying. So that's one group of scams. Then there's a group of, well, you know, I'm going to wire you more, you know, I'm going to send you in PayPal more than the amount of the car, and you just send it back to me, right? So that's like the old check cashing scam. We know what those look like. That's a scam. There's another one where it seems like everybody just, it must be coming from somewhere abroad, because the all of the, there's so many misspellings of names. They don't even spell their own name correctly. They keep changing email addresses. That should be, you know, ring some bells in your head as well. But lots of people conclude business carefully on PayPal. And if you want to read what PayPal actually says about this, you can go to the site like I just did, and you can read what their fraud policy is and how to avoid it. And I think there are very easy ways to avoid it. And as I said, I know people who do this all day long on PayPal, and they're all fine. So you have to be careful. You have to use your wits, as I always tell you. And if you're really worried about it, go sell your car to CarMax, because you'll get a fair price and you'll get a check that's good right away and sell it on the spot. So you have to decide, you know, there is a level of risk that you take for anything other than, say, a CarMax. And there you trade risk for price a little bit. So just understand what you're doing, what risks you're taking, and then try to prepare yourself as well as you possibly can for doing the deal. All right, let's go back to the phones, because I want to make sure we have time for as many as we can today. Kim joins us on the line from Stone Mountain. Hi, Kim.
Hi, Elise. How are you? Love your show.
Thank you.
I'm 58 years old, and I am a widow.
Okay.
But what I'm calling you about is I have an emergency fund. It's about $10,000, and I have it in my checking account.
That's a good place for it.
Okay. I was thinking maybe a credit union, so you agree with that.
Well, what you want, Kim,
it's safe.
You want it safe. You want, you know, whatever interest you're earning on it is so nominal these days.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't even matter. I mean, you take $10,000 and you cross the street for a quarter of a percent a year.
Right.
It's not a huge difference, you know, in your life. So I don't think you should just constantly move around the money. How many months of payments, either, you know, house or your living expenses, how many months of payments is that $10,000 for you?
Well, I'm very fortunate. I don't have, my home is paid for.
Great. And what about your other living expenses? You must, you know, utilities and cell phone and
I'm
gas.
I'm going to say $850 a month.
Oh, great. So you've got,
I'm very fortunate.
Very fortunate, and you've got these assets stuck away. That's great. Good for you. So the only thing I would say to you is, if you wanted to do slightly better, and, you know, I don't necessarily think you have to do this, but if you wanted to and you feel bad, you could take half of your $10,000, $5,000, and you could put it into a CD that's like a six-month CD. Because you know that you'll have 6 months of payments left, and by the time the CD would come due, if you needed the money, you'd be able to have it. Now, I don't think you're going to be well rewarded for all that effort.
Right.
But that would be the next step.
Okay, well, with that advice, I think I may just let it sit.
That's what we've been doing in our house. We've just been letting it sit. Because to move it around like that, it really requires quite a lot of thought, and you just would want to stay on top of it, and you may or may not have the time for that. But
okay.
How are you doing with the rest of your finances? It sounds like you were left
Well,
okay.
On my job, I have the match 4%.
Mm-hmm. That's
and
great.
I have a Roth IRA, and I'm able to put the $6,000 in per year because I'm 58.
Great.
And I just want to add, in my husband passed. We bought a home in 1993. My husband passed away in 95.
Wow.
My name was on everything.
Yeah.
I stayed in that home, and I sold it in 2005 before the bottom dropped out.
Oh, good for you.
So I was really blessed. And when you made the comment about the widows, I just couldn't believe it.
There are a lot of people. You should see my Twitter feed right now. There are a whole bunch of people who have tweeted me that their husbands have everything in their name and they have nothing and they don't know where it is. And I know this to be true because I've written about this topic for so long, and I'm so passionate about knowing everything. And I'm so glad for you because you experienced this.
And after burial and everything, I started talking to some of my coworkers. And they didn't even know what their property taxes were because their husbands took care of everything.
Right.
And I'm talking about 17 years ago. you know, where we talked about things and we just said, this is the way we're going to do it. And I, and 17 years later, I'm in this position, and I'm just so thankful. And I just wanted to share that to anybody that's listening. Don't be afraid. Stand up for yourself.
Was it, it's interesting, did you have to ask your husband to let you do that, or did you,
well, you
did
know,
he say, I want you to know?
Well, we didn't have children. There were stepchildren involved.
Mm-hmm.
And he really wanted to protect me.
Yeah.
And when he passed away, I mean, the people came, his, the families came out of the woodwork. You
not,
know, had my name not been on that home, it just would have been a mess.
Oh, yeah. They,
you know,
because they would have grabbed everything.
Oh, my God, his brothers. Oh, it was a nightmare. But I just put my foot down, and I made all the decisions.
You know what,
and
Kim?
And I knew when things settled down, some of the people I would never see again, and it didn't bother me.
Good.
It didn't bother me.
Because you know what your husband wanted, and that was to protect you.
Right.
And he protected you with not only information, but he actually put you on everything, and you shared the process together so that, and I watched my mother deal with this. My mother
mm-hmm.
was, her name was fortunately on whatever little they had back then.
Right.
But she, and she paid the bills because my father didn't have a head for balancing checkbooks, to be honest.
Mm-hmm.
But
right, right.
When he died at 49, and my mother was 44, 45, she reached out to his best friends who were all financial wizards, and they educated her, and they brought her along the path, and she grabbed control and never let it go. She had
mm-hmm.
guidance and help along the way, but she really just sort of grabbed it. And then from the day my father died, she had my sisters and I know everything, which
right.
I was 18, my sisters were 15.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people would have said, why would you want your teenage kids to know what you have? They still can't believe that we already, you know, we know everything about my mom's money.
Right.
But she felt like it was a family project, that my father had died and the four of us were going to forge through together, and we've known forever, and fortunately the three of us have done very well in lives. We don't need her money. She has lots of money. It's worked out great. But it's the knowledge and the knowing and the understanding that I think makes all the difference.
Right.
It has for you.
It's just to be comfortable, because when my husband passed, he was 45.
He was 45?
You know, he was 45, lung
I'm
cancer
sorry.
Smoker.
Oh.
But another person that helped me a lot was Mike Cavanaugh.
Mike Cavanaugh?
Yes. Wonderful man.
Oh, Mike Cavanaugh.
Yeah.
I haven't talked about him very much lately, but he was a wonderful, wonderful
mm-hmm.
guy.
But I'm going to say thank you, and you just keep up the good work. You, Clark, and Wes, and Dave Ramsey, Susie Orman, and the books in the library. The education is there. Educate yourself, people. Have a great day.
Thank you, Kim. Thanks for sharing all of that, and I wish you a very happy 2013. Oh, Mike Cavanaugh. What a great guy. 404-872-0750. Touched so many lives through the 30 years he was on the air here and hosting Money Matters, which now Wes Moss has taken over that show. Just a lovely man. Kevin joins us on the line. Hey, Kevin.
Hey, how are you doing today?
I'm good, thank you. What can I do for you?
Good. I got a quick question. I'm 53 and just retired, and my wife is 58, and she's been retired for 2 years.
Okay.
We have money in savings. We both were in our 401k for like 30 years with our company. And what we did when we retired, we took our retirement in a lump sum, and we put hers into an annuity that's a guaranteed percent, 6%, and then when I retired, I put mine into a guaranteed 5%. Well, my question is, I keep hearing all these people say how bad annuities are and stuff like that, but we're happy with where we are, and we don't have any bills, we don't have any house payments or anything like that. Is it okay that we have our money in annuity, or should we move it somewhere else, or what?
Well, Kevin, there are different kinds of annuities. Right? So the annuities that I like, that Clark likes, are immediate annuities. And it sounds like that might be what you have.
Well, mine is the one, supposedly, that you never run out of money as long as, you know, you put your money in and it's guaranteed 5 or 6% for life.
Right. So that's like an immediate annuity.
So
the annuities that I don't like are the ones where you pay in for like 30 years.
Right.
And then you get money, like, I don't even know how that works. So, well, I do know how it works. But, you know, the immediate annuities, which can be very, very good deals, and it sounds like it's a good deal for you, and it's given you a stream of income, I would just say to you that, you know, 5% on your money for life, you're 53. I don't know what that's going to look like at 83 and or 93. And so I'm hopeful that you and your wife thought about this, because you're very young to have retired, and maybe you'll go back and do something else in a couple of years. And I say that because I'm 48 and you're only 5 years older than me. That seems like way too soon for me to be retiring. But for you, maybe that's fine. I just, you know, when you get a fixed income, as inflation goes on and your income doesn't change, it can pose some problems down the line, as opposed to putting money in that continues to grow and move out. So maybe you've got other income that'll come in, right? So eventually you guys will be able to collect Social Security. That should add to your income. Maybe there's other kinds of benefits that will kick in when you're 65 or 60 or 59 and a half. And we'll see. Hard to know precisely. But that's my concern when somebody's very young and they do this, to just make sure. The other thing is, if something happens to you and you die and your money goes away entirely, your wife is left with her 6% a year for life. And then the question is, was that enough, or were the two of you thinking you'd have your joint money? And how does that work? You know, usually the wife has less in savings, so she would have a higher percentage, but less, you know, maybe it's $100,000 versus $150,000 for you. So I hope you've thought about all of that, and that this is exactly the answer that somebody helped you design, who was able to run the Monte Carlo scenario with 390 different things that might happen, and this is how you're doing it, in which case, it's all good. It's all fine. If not, I suggest you go talk to somebody who can actually look at the whole big picture for you, and just to give yourselves a gut check that where you are and what you're doing is the right thing to do. I think that's the only way you can go about doing it. Again, it's all about understanding how the money fits into your goals and your plans and where you're going forward. It's 12:47. I'm Elise Glink. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, a couple more questions, I hope. So stay tuned. Don't forget to check in on Twitter at Glink. And listen to me now on News Talk WSB.
Find her expert advice anytime at thinkglink.com. And find her live midday every Sunday on AM 750. And now 95.5 FM News Talk WSB.
12:55, News Talk WSB. I see that a bunch of people have already sent me more email this week. Well, I'm off to San Francisco for a whole bunch of business meetings, but in my spare time, I will do what I can to get back to you. Please check out thinklink.com. Type your question into the search engine, and you never know, maybe one of the 10,000 pages of content we have on the site will answer your question exactly. That's just in case I don't get back as quickly as I can to you. But in any case, Twitter works as well, at Glink, at G-L-I-N-K. And don't forget to sign up for the free weekly newsletter when you do get to thinklink.com. 404-872-0750. It is 12:56. Let's go back to the phones. Ken joins us on the line. Ken, you've got a question about biweekly mortgage payments?
Yes. Hi, Elise. Thank you.
Sure.
Elise, we refinanced our loan about 7 months ago, and then we started getting a couple of solicitations about, you should do this biweekly payment plan. And it says it didn't come from our mortgage company, but it's got our mortgage company's name on them.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just trying to find out, what is it? What's your opinion of them? Basically, I called, and the upshot is it would be an extra $3 every biweekly mortgage payment, so about another $72 a year. About another $90 a year, roughly. So I'd like to know your opinion on them.
So they're asking you to spend, how much is the program to set it up? So it's usually like anywhere from $100 to $400.
They claim it's no fee to set it up.
Okay. So then what they're hoping to do is to make the money on the float. My feeling is you can achieve the exact same thing on your own and then control the process. And that way, if you do have tougher finances and you don't want to make an extra mortgage payment a year, because that's really what you're doing, is making an extra mortgage payment a year.
Right.
And that takes you from 30 years to like 22, 23 years. Two mortgage payments a year will take you closer to the 15-year mark. Three mortgage payments a year will take you to 15 years, maybe 14 years. That's kind of how it works, right? So you can just make an extra payment a year yourself. Take a payment, divide by 12, add it to your monthly payment, and voila, you've made an extra payment.
If it's a 20-year loan, about how much? How many years would that shave off?
Well, so 20 years is really interesting because once you cut the first 10 years of payments, that's where all the really big interest rate savings is, 10 to 15 years. So if you make an extra payment a year, and you can calculate this on ThinkLink, I'm not on my own website right now, but we have an amortization schedule that you can just plug this in. And it depends on your interest rate, because the lower your interest rate, the less you're saving anyway, because you're not paying very much in interest.
Yeah, it's like 4.125.
So if you're paying 4%, I'm just going to guesstimate here, right? But you can look at thinklink.com and run the numbers yourself. You probably cut a 20-year loan to maybe 15, 16 years.
Mm-hmm.
Not as much as you would imagine. And then the next one would probably take you below 15 years. So it's still a great way to save money, and you will be doing it, but you don't have to pay anybody else to do it, and you don't have to, you know, get locked into something you may not want to be locked into. And I always feel like when you throw in an extra little thing, it's one more place where the whole system can get kinked up. So make the mortgage payment yourself if you want to do this, and then I think it's all going to be good. Just make the same amount payment every single month and direct the excess to paying down the principal. All right, you're hearing the music. That means our time is up. Thank you so much for your calls. Follow me on Twitter. Go to Facebook. Sign up. Follow us on Facebook. Join us on the ThinkLink community at thinklink.com. Have a great week, everybody, and I'll be back next Sunday at 11 o'clock. Be there, be square. Have a great week.